Prince Harald stood impatiently before the closed main gates, hiding his growing irritation behind his usual calm mask, while a servant fussed around him, adjusting the buckles on his armor. The many layers of overlapping chainmail were hot, heavy, and restricting, but Harald was a great believer in armor. No matter how good you were with sword and buckler, sooner or later you were bound to face someone better or luckier than you, and that's when a good suit of chainmail came into its own. Harald frowned slightly as he remembered his last fight with Rupert here in the courtyard. His armor hadn't saved him then. Harald's face slowly cleared as he dismissed the thought. Things were different now. Now he had Flarebright. The infernal device hung down his back, the long hilt standing up behind his left shoulder. He caught glimpses of the hilt out of the corner of his eye every time he turned his head. Flarebright was eerily light for so large a blade, but Harald could still feel its presence with every move he made. There was a dull, unpleasant warmth the length of his back, as though the sword burned constantly like a hot coal in its scabbard. And sometimes, for no reason at all, Harald thought of how good it would feel to draw the infernal device and cut down enemies without number.
All right, Prince Harald. All done.
Thank you. Now be gone.
Aye, sire.
Rupert, you will not be better than I am. This time.
Harald began a series of warming up exercises. The solid weight of steel in his hand was a comfort to him, and he could feel some of the tension going out of his muscles as he moved gracefully through the familiar routine. He'd been taking his training a lot more seriously since Rupert had beaten him, and he could feel the difference. He'd always been good, but now he was even better. Rupert's grinning face hung before Harald's eyes as he stamped and lunged and circled, his sword sweeping from thrust to parry to slash and back over and over again. Flarebright's scabbard slapped against his back with every movement, as though reminding him it was still there. Harald whirled and spun, his sword slashing brightly in the torchlight. But still, he knew that once he was out in the long night, his own sword wouldn't be enough for all his skill and training. His only chance against the demons was to use the infernal device. Somehow, he wasn't as eager to use it as he thought he'd be. He saw the king making his way toward him, but deliberately continued his exercises. He waited until the king had almost reached him, and only then looked up and came to a stop.
Hello, father.
Ready for the battle, Harald?
Of course, father.
King John stood silently a moment, as though waiting for Harald to say something more. Harald let him wait.
You wanted to speak to me, Harald.
That's right, father. I want you to marry Julia to me before the battle. There is still time.
You want what?
I want Julia as my wife, and I want the ceremony performed now. It will do wonders for the morale of our people, and settle once and for all the somewhat nagging question as to whether I or Rupert is the favored son. I need to be sure the people will follow me.
Your marriage has been postponed. Apart from the fact that this is neither the time nor the place for a wedding, I don't want Rupert upset. It won't be long before he'll be riding out into battle alongside us. And there are those who will follow him where they won't follow you.
Precisely my point. I am the eldest son, the firstborn. I am the one whose orders they should follow. Besides, there are other reasons for the marriage. It's entirely possible that you and I and Rupert could all die in this battle, leaving the forest land without a ruler. If Julia and I were married, the royal line could still continue through her. And if, by some calamity, you were to die while Rupert and I both survived, my being married to Julia could well ensure my succession to the throne. Either way, holding the marriage now would make your wishes in the matter quite clear. Otherwise, we could win this battle against the darkness and still lose the land to civil war.
No. I've given you my answer, Harald, and I don't like to repeat myself. The wedding is postponed indefinitely.
I see. So that's the way the wind blows.
For a long moment, the two men faced each other silently, their eyes locked. From all around them came the clamor and hubbub of the last army of the forest land as it slowly readied itself for battle. But Harald and the king were deaf and blind to everything but the moment of conflict between them. King John studied his eldest son coldly.
You are my eldest son. When the gates finally open, you will ride out beside me at my right hand. But Rupert is also my son, and he will ride out at my left hand. It is vital for the morale of our troops that the three of us present a united front against the darkness. Our army is going to have enough to worry about without having to decide whose orders they will and won't obey. We don't have time for politics anymore. So, there is to be no more open dissension between you and Rupert. Is that clear, Harold?
Perfectly clear.
Good. Then there's nothing more we need to discuss, is there?
I saw you speaking with the Warlock. Is he still drinking?
Of course. But he'll do what's needed when he has to.
Tell me, I've always wondered, were the stories true?
Stories? What stories?
The stories about him and Mother, of course. They say he loved her. They also said...
Don't you!
King John lifted his hand to strike Harold across the face, and then slowly lowered it again. Harold didn't flinch, but his eyes were wary and watchful.
Harold.
Yes, Father.
You've the makings of a good king, Harold. You know politics and intrigue and law. You even understand the paperwork, which is more than I ever did. But you'll need more than that if people are to support you. Oh, you've charm enough when you choose to use it, but... I don't know where your heart really lies. And I doubt if anyone else does either. Sometimes I worry about you, lad. You're my son, my blood and kin, yet I swear you're as much a stranger to me now as the day you were born.
I'm what you made me.
Harold's father flinched at the words. The main stables stood dark and abandoned on the far side of the courtyard. The doors gaped open, unattended, and the horses and the grooms were gone. Inside the stables, a single lantern shed a golden glow over the end stall as Rupert saddled his unicorn. The still air was thick with the smells of dirt and hay and horse dung. Rupert knew he should find the abandoned stable disturbing, but somehow he didn't. If anything, he rather liked the quiet. It felt good to get away from everything and everybody, even if only for a while. Outside the stable doors, the courtyard seemed too far away to have anything to do with him. Rupert settled the unicorn saddle comfortably into place and then set about fastening the many dangling straps. The unicorn looked a lot better than the last time Rupert had seen him. His wounds had been cleaned and roughly stitched. His mane and tail had been cleaned and combed, and there was even a little barley left in his feeding trough.
So, how are you feeling?
Bloody awful. If I felt any worse, you'd be making glue out of my hooves. I can't believe we're actually going out to fight the demons again. Whose bright idea was that?
Mine, actually.
Yeah, well, I might have known.
Oh, there's no need to be like that. Just once more into battle and then it'll all be over.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm afraid of. Isn't there anything else we could try?
Like what?
Running away leaps to mind.
Where could we go? The darkness is everywhere now. No, unicorn, we either stand and fight... or wait to die. There's nothing else left to us.
For a long while, neither of them said anything. Shadows pressed close about the lantern's golden glow, and the air grew steadily colder. Rupert finished readying the unicorn and then sank wearily down onto a pile of dirty straw. An hour at most, and then he'd have to go out and face the dark wood again. Face the demons and the darkness and the horror of the endless night.
Oh, you know... I think I'm actually too tired to be really scared.
Rupert?
Yes?
You once asked me my name. I told you then that I'd sworn never to use my name until I was free again, but now... Well, it seems to me that if I don't tell you now, there might not be another chance.
You don't have to tell me if you don't want to.
No. You're my friend. My name is Breeze.
Rupert got to his feet and hugged the unicorn's neck tightly.
Thank you, Breeze. Breeze, if by some miracle we actually survive this mess, you're free. I swear it, by blood and stone. I'll check the records to find which valley you were taken from initially. Some of your old herd might still be there. Perhaps we could go and look for them together.
Yeah, I'd like that, Rupert.
You don't believe we're going to survive this one, do you?
No, I do not.
All right, then. By the authority vested in me, by blood and stone, I hereby free the unicorn named Breeze from any and all obligations to me and my family. Okay, Breeze, that's it. You are now a 100% independent individual, or as near as any of us ever get to it.
Is that all there is to it?
What did you expect? A fanfare of trumpets? Or isn't my word good enough for you?
No, no, no. Your word has always been good with me, Robert. But is it legal?
Of course. I am a prince, after all.
Yeah, I had noticed. Free! Free. I always thought I'd feel different.
How do you feel?
Strange. Naked. No, I don't know yet.
Well, if nothing else, you don't have to go back into the dark wood again. I've freed you from all obligations, remember?
You wouldn't last 5 minutes without me.
That's not the point, Breeze.
Oh, yes it is. I could have left you any time in the past. You gave me enough chances. When all is said and done, I stayed with you because you were my friend and you needed me. No other reason. So let's have no more nonsense about you going back into the dark wood without me. We're a team, and don't you forget it.
Still, you are officially free now. I've said the words.
Don't we need a witness or something?
You have one.
Rupert and the unicorn looked quickly round to find the champion standing in the stable doorway. He inclined his head slightly to Rupert, who bowed warily in return. The champion was wearing full plate armor. The burnished steel gleamed coldly under the lantern light, its entire surface etched and engraved with heraldic signs and ancient magical wards. He carried a featureless steel helm under his arm, and his huge hands were sheathed in massive steel gauntlets. He looked impressive, menacing, and totally unstoppable.
Sir Champion, is it time to go?
Soon, sire. The king tells me you refused to bear one of the infernal devices when it was offered to you.
That's right.
It was your duty to take the sword.
My duty is to the land, Sir Champion. And those cursed swords are as much a threat to the forest as the Darkwood itself.
You may well be right, sire. But then, I've never had much use for magic myself.
Rupert looked sharply at the champion. He seemed almost to the point of telling Rupert something important.
Have you seen the warlock?
Yes, we talked a while.
He's drunk again.
I've never known him when he wasn't.
I have, but that was a long time ago.
He leaned back against the stable wall, his cold, dark eyes staring past Rupert and into memory.
He was impressive then. Could have been a sorcerer supreme. Could have been the legend everybody said he was. He could have been the greatest hero this land has ever known.
Sir Champion, why did the High Warlock leave the castle after my mother died?
He could have saved her if he'd been sober. If he'd been there.
Rage twisted the champion's face, and Rupert wanted to look away. It seemed almost indecent to see such naked emotions in the face of a man who normally showed such control.
The Warlock was why I came to Forest Castle, Rupert. He was famous, and I wanted to be part of that fame. Legend. And so I came to serve your father as his champion. That's when I learned the truth about the legendary High Warlock. Your mother was a great beauty, Rupert. Everybody said so. When she fell ill that summer, all the land prayed for her recovery. The Warlock was supposed to be with her that afternoon. Instead, he left her by herself and went off somewhere, drinking. By the time we found him and dragged him back, it was too late. And then he ran away. He ran away. I all but worshipped that man, Rupert. I believed in him. And he turned out to be nothing but a drunk and a coward. I could have forgiven him many things, but not that. Never that. He let your mother die. And then he ran away rather than face what he'd done. And now he's back. And once again, all our fates rest in his stumbling hands. After all these years, despite everything I've believed as champion, the land's destiny will be decided not by heroes and warriors and cold, clean steel, but by one drunken coward and his magic.
The champion turned suddenly and stalked out of the stables, his hands curled into massive, impotent fists at his sides. Rupert watched him disappear into the waiting crowd. A memory came to him of him and the champion standing together on a hill, looking down over the Coppertown pit. Of the champion telling how he had run away from the mines as a small child, and how he would never run from anything ever again.
Move aside! Out of my way!
It had started out as a thoroughly rotten day, and it showed no signs of improving in its last few hours. Julia looked about her, hoping against hope to catch a glimpse of Rupert somewhere in the courtyard, but he was nowhere to be seen. She turned and headed for the far corner where her troop of fighting women were waiting for her. She'd promised to lead them through one last weapons drill before the battle. Not that it would make much difference. The gates would open at dawn, and shortly after that, her women would either be warriors or dead. Julia's mind worked frantically as she plunged on through the crowd, searching desperately for a way out of her dilemma. And then a sudden calm fell over her as she realized there was no way out. Her women needed her, and she'd given them her word that she'd be there. Rupert would have understood. He knew a lot about duty. The crowd suddenly broke apart before her, and Julia stumbled to a halt as King John stepped out of the crowd to block her path. Harold stood at the king's side, carrying a huge sheathed longsword in his arms, as though it were both infinitely precious and utterly repellent. Julia eyed Harold and the king warily as they bowed to her. They were being polite and formal, which could only mean that they were up to something. She watched their faces change as they realized she was no longer wearing formal court robes, and smiled politely at them, daring them to say anything. She'd had to search half the castle laundry to find the sensible, hard-wearing clothes she'd worn in the forest during her time with Rupert, but it had been worth it. For the first time in months, she felt comfortable. Besides, she couldn't use a sword properly while wearing formal robes.
Princess Julia, your garments are hardly suitable for a lady of the court.
Probably not, but they're quite suitable for wearing during battle. If you think I'm going out to fight demons wearing slippers and a long flowing gown, you're crazy. Now, did you have something in particular you wanted to say to me, or were you just indulging in a little fashion criticism?
We have something for you.
Oh, yes? And what might that be?
A sword. It's called Wolfsbane.
He held out to her the long silver scabbard he was carrying, and Julia looked at it for a long moment before finally taking it from him. Despite its 7 feet and more of length, the sword seemed practically weightless in her hands. The scabbard was covered in ancient, deeply etched runes that teased her eyes with hints of meaning. Julia immediately took a dislike to the sword. It seemed unhealthy. She started to hand the sword back to Harold and then stopped as she realized both he and the king were wearing similar swords strapped to their backs. The long leather-bound hilts peered over their shoulders like watchful eyes. And that was when Julia remembered the name Wolfsbane.
Oh, this is one of the infernal devices. One of the most powerful and evil swords ever created. And you expect me to use this?
There are only hope now. We need their power.
Wait a minute. Why are you offering me this sword, and not Rupert?
He didn't want it.
Why not?
Perhaps he was afraid of its power.
Perhaps he had reason to be.
The king shifted uncomfortably as Julia turned her searching gaze on him.
We did offer him the blade, Julia, but he refused to take it. He said he didn't trust magic swords anymore. Do you understand what he meant by that?
No, I don't.
She hefted Wolfsbane in her hand and made as though to draw it.
I wouldn't do that, Julia. You might unleash the sword's attribute.
Julia studied the sheathed sword and frowned thoughtfully.
3 infernal devices, each with a different attribute. I remember the stories my father told me when I was very young, of 3 magic swords and the evil and destruction they caused before they could be brought under control. Rockbreaker, Flarebright, Wolfsbane. I never thought I'd hold a legend in my hand. What is Wolfsbane's attribute? What does it do?
We're not exactly sure. It's been so long since anyone dared draw any of the blades.
Great! Just great. All right. What do you know about the infernal devices?
They like blood, and they love to kill.
But why me? All right, Rupert wouldn't take the sword, but why does it have to be me? Why not the champion or the astrologer or...
You're of royal blood.
Of course. A sword like this could make any man a king, and there's no one else you can trust with that kind of power.
That's right. No one but you.
And I'll bet that sticks in your craw something fierce. A woman with a sword. What is the world coming to? All right, I'll use Wolfsbane. But only if I have to. I don't trust magic swords either.
She slung the scabbarded sword over her left shoulder and buckled it securely into place. Harold moved forward as though to help, but stopped short when Julia fixed him with a scornful eye.
Has either of you seen Rupert around?
I've no doubt he's here somewhere, but I haven't seen him since Darius died.
Oh, right. I heard about that. Good to know Darius finally got what was coming to him.
Quite. I haven't seen Rupert at all, but then he hasn't had much to say to me since I told him he was still going to be best man at our wedding.
Julia looked at him and then at the king.
You can't leave him alone, can you? Even now, you can't leave him any peace or hope of peace. You're beneath contempt, both of you. Get out of my sight.
Julia!
Get away from me! Damn your eyes!
King John bowed stiffly to her and turned and walked away. Harold opened his mouth to say something. Julia rested her hand on the pommel of her sword. Harold smiled politely and followed his father into the crowd. Julia watched him go and was surprised to find herself shaking with the strength of her emotions. She breathed deeply, filling her lungs with the freezing courtyard air, and slowly some of her calm came back to her.
Rupert, what are we going to do?
She shook her head slowly and saw a long leather-wrapped sword hilt out of the corner of her eye. She scowled at it and looked away. Wolfsbane was a solid, uncomfortable presence at her back, for all its lightness, and she wasn't at all sure she'd done the right thing in accepting it. She felt happier with the blade she knew, hanging in its usual place at her left hip. The sword Rupert had given her long ago, in a dark wood clearing when all had seemed lost. Julia looked around the packed milling courtyard.
Wherever you are, Rupert, watch your back.
She then strode off into the crowd, heading for her waiting troop of women. And the infernal device on her back seemed to grow a little heavier with every step.
All right, once again.
Rupert stood in the shadows of the stable doors, watching Julia drill her troop of women. Swords and spears and hand axes gleamed in the torchlight as the women stamped and lunged, their movements still somehow graceful despite the cumbersome chainmail they all wore. Julia strode back and forth before them, stopping briefly to smile and encourage or demonstrate a difficult cut or parry. As she moved through the flickering, uncertain light, sword in hand, her tall, lithe form seemed like that of some ancient warrior goddess teaching the arts of war to her worshippers. She was dressed simply, as she had been when Rupert first knew her, and he wasn't sure why that hurt him as much as it did. With her old clothes and her long blonde hair tied back in two simple functional braids, she was like a bitter accusing memory of the time they'd had together, before he'd brought her back to Forest Castle. He'd been so happy then.
I wish you'd go and talk to her. You're getting on my nerves standing there all frowning and brooding.
There's nothing left to say. She's marrying Harold of her own free will.
Oh, sure. And demons are vegetarians. You're too hard on the girl, Rupert. If she's marrying Harold, it's only because the court pressured her into it. It's not as if she had any choice in the matter now, is it?
I don't know. I don't know anything anymore.
Buck up. We'll be going out into the dark soon. Oh, think of all the fun you can have taking out your troubles on the demons. They won't know what's hit them.
Yeah, sure.
Out in the courtyard, Julia turned suddenly to face the stables, and Rupert backed away quickly from the doors before she could see him. He didn't know why he was so angry. It was her life, and she had a right to live it as she chose. He hadn't known her very long, after all. They'd spent a few months of travel together, and then he'd had to leave her at the castle while he went off in search of the Dark Tower. After so many months apart, with every reason to suppose him dead, it was only to be expected that Julia would turn to somebody else. And Harold always was a charming bastard. Their marriage had been all but inevitable. But he'd be damned if he was going to be the best man. He turned his back on the open stable doors and tugged irritably at his new chainmail. The vest had obviously been fashioned for someone a few inches taller and a great deal broader than he was, and in the few places where it did fit, it chafed him unmercifully. The arms were too long, the leggings were baggy, and the waistline was a joke. And to top it all, his hood kept falling forward over his eyes. Rupert stomped back and forth between the stalls, trying to get the feeling of the armor, but soon gave up in disgust. It could take weeks to make a new set of chainmail fit just right, and he didn't have weeks. It would just have to do as it was.
Oh, this is just typical.
What is?
Well, here I am, all dressed up in bright new armor, about to go back into the dark and fight evil, and all I can think of is how much I need to visit the Jakes.
Ah, it's just the nerves, lad. Think about something else.
It's all right for you. You can take a piss anytime you feel like it. I have to unbuckle half my damn armor first.
Don't worry. Once we get outside the gate, one look at the demon horde will undoubtedly scare the piss right out of you.
You're a great help.
You're welcome.
Ah, to hell with it.
Robert!
What are you doing?
First, I'm going to get rid of this damned armor, and then I'm going to empty my bladder. Any more questions?
Just one. How long do you think you're going to survive out there without any armor? They'll rip you to pieces.
I'll cross that bridge when I come to it. Ah, I can breathe again. Now for this damn codpiece.
Ah, as I recall, the last time you threw away your armor, we were immediately ambushed by a bunch of goblins, and you terrorized the lot of them. Who knows? Maybe you'll get lucky again.
There we go. Now I'm ready to fight.
Oh, dear.
What is it?
Just the power of suggestion.
Ah. You know, I fight better without armor. Chainmail's not as bad as plate armor, but this stuff's like a sack and just gets in the way. I'll keep the vest. I'm not entirely daft.
All right.
Did you say something, Unicorn?
I wouldn't dare.
Rupert walked back to the Unicorn, readjusting his sword belt.
You feeling better now?
Much.
And perhaps you'd like to tell me just what you think our chances are of coming out of this mess alive.
Rupert looked away from the Unicorn and shrugged tiredly.
I don't know, Breeze. We've got the High Warlock on our side, if he sobers up in time. And the infernal devices should make quite a difference if we can keep them under control. Our own chances aren't particularly good, but we've beaten long odds before, haven't we?
In other words, we're going to die out there.
It looks like it. We've pushed our luck as far as it will go, my friend. Only a miracle will get us out of this one. Still, at least this way we have a chance to take some of the demons with us.
Then that we'll have to do.
Rupert?
Huh?
Rupert looked around quickly and saw Julia standing half-silhouetted in the stable doorway.
I need to talk to you.
She moved slowly forward into the lantern light, and Rupert didn't know whether to smile or bow or turn and run. In her old familiar clothes, she looked just the way she used to be, and he didn't want to be reminded of that.
I'm busy right now, Julia. Can't this wait?
No, it can't.
She studied Rupert in silence, taking in the dark bruises of fatigue beneath his eyes and his watchful, wary stance. There was a grim, defeated look to him that she'd never seen before, and for a moment, it was like looking at a stranger. The moment passed, and Julia smiled suddenly. When in doubt, go to the heart of the matter.
I love you, Rupert.
He flinched as though she'd hit him.
Of course you love me, and that's why you're marrying Harold.
No, Rupert. They can threaten and plead, and they can drag me kicking and screaming to the altar, but they can't make me marry him.
Sure.
Rupert couldn't seem to raise enough strength to be angry. He was too tired to be anything but bitter. Julia reached out and put a hand on his arm, and it seemed heavy, even in its gentleness.
Rupert, I don't want you to go off into battle believing a lie. I don't give a damn for Harold, or for being a princess, or anything but being with you.
I saw you in the court. I saw how you behaved with Harold.
I was angry. I wanted to hurt you, to make you jealous, because... Oh, Rupert! Oh!
She took him in her arms. He clung to her desperately, like a drowning man, his face buried in her neck. She hugged him fiercely back, not flinching even when his strength hurt her.
Don't leave me, Julia. You're all I've got left.
I'll never leave you. Never again, my love.
Me neither, Rupert.
Without looking, Rupert reached out with one arm and hugged the unicorn's neck. After a while, he regained control of himself and straightened up. Julia immediately let go of him and brushed at his clothes and pulled his chain vest straight so that she wouldn't have to see his face while he composed himself again. Rupert was funny about things like that.
How long before they open the gates?
Not long now.
He smiled at Julia as she fussed over him, and then frowned suddenly as he caught sight of the leather-bound sword hilt standing up behind her left shoulder.
Julia, where did you get that sword?
The king wanted me to have it. He said you'd turned it down.
That's right, I did. I wished you had too.
It's only a sword, Rupert.
No, it isn't. That thing on your back is an infernal device, an evil so great my ancestors kept it locked away in the armory for over 500 years rather than risk using it.
How can any sword be that evil?
According to legend, the swords are alive, and they corrupt the souls of those who bear them.
Wait, a sword is a sword. All right, it feels wrong somehow, but as long as it kills demons, I'll have a use for it. Anyway, you carry a magic sword. The rainbow sword. I'd forgotten about it. Why can't we use that against the darkness? It worked before, remember?
I've already tried, Julia. It doesn't work anymore.
Julia's face fell, and for a moment they stood together in silence. Julia glanced out the stable door.
Rupert, I can't stay much longer. My women are waiting for me.
Yes, I watched you drilling them. They looked, promising. I don't know, it hardly seems fair to send you out into the dark carrying an infernal device and leading a company of fighting women. I mean, we just want to kill the demons, not terrorize them.
I'll make you pay for that. After the battle's over.
Promise?
Promise.
They looked at each other steadily. Rupert reached out and took Julia's hands in his.
Julia, whatever happens, I love you. Never doubt it.
And I love you, Rupert. Watch your back when we finally get out there.
Right. And after we've won.
Yes, there'll be time for lots of things after we've won.
They looked into each other's eyes, and then Julia turned and walked out of the stables, back to her waiting troop of women. Rupert watched her go, and for the first time in a long time, he felt at peace with himself. He reached inside his chainmail vest, and from under his jerkin he brought out a crumpled, battered handkerchief spotted with faded bloodstains.
My lady's favor.
He touched the cloth to his lips, and then tucked it carefully back into place over his heart.
This is it.
That it is.
Lancers! Behind me!
100 lancers urged their horses forward to take up their position behind the champion. The couched lances stabbed proudly up at the starless night sky, their gleaming shafts bedecked with brightly colored ribbons and ladies' favors like so many brilliant banners. The champion himself sat astride a massive evil-eyed charger, the torchlight gleaming ruddy on his freshly polished armor. Impressive and invincible, he towered above the milling crowd, a hero out of legend.
Men-at-arms, fall in!
The guards and men-at-arms moved in behind the lancers. They clenched their teeth against the cold and glanced at the closed gates with eager anticipation, glad that the waiting was almost over.
Conscripts, fall in!
And behind them, bringing up the rear, came the courtiers and farmers and traders, uncomfortable in their ill-fitting armor, but quietly determined not to be found wanting when the time came. Men and women stood side by side, carrying swords and pikes and hand axes, and no one thought it strange. Women were fighting for the same reason as men, because they were needed, because there was no one else. Rupert slowly made his way through the crowd to take his place at the head of the army.
May we join you, sire?
Is that Rob? Rob Hawk?
Aye, sire. All of us who went with you to fight the High Warlock. We'd like to follow you into battle.
Why, that's... But what are you doing here? You should all be taking it easy in your barracks. You're walking wounded.
If we can walk, we're not wounded. That's the orders. Besides, why should you have all the fun? We were just getting the hang of killing demons when you dragged us back into the castle.
You know the odds are stacked against us.
Sire, when haven't the odds been stacked against us?
That's right. We're getting used to that.
Well, all right then. Follow me. But no more of this sire business. I'm Rupert. You're Rob.
Aye. A pleasure to fight by your side, Rupert.
King John was kneeling beside his horse in the shadows of the inner north wall, struggling with a stubborn girth strap. His tousled gray hair was held in place by a simple leather headband, and his chainmail bore the scars and repairs from 100 old campaigns. Rockbreaker clung to his back as though it was part of him, but he still wore his old familiar sword on his left hip. The astrologer stood beside him, watching patiently.
Here, John.
Thanks. Never was much good with horses.
You're welcome, John.
I'm glad you're here, Thomas.
It seems there's nobody else in this castle who gives a damn whether I live or die.
There's always your family.
Family? I haven't had a family since my Eleanor died. My sons and I aren't what you'd call close. No reason why we should be. Harold is a brave enough fighter and a better statesman, but his heart is as empty as a pauper's purse. I don't think he'd know an honest emotion if it bit him.
And Rupert?
For a moment, Thomas Gray thought John was going to tell him to mind his own business, and then John's shoulders suddenly slumped, and the king looked somehow older.
Rupert, not once in his life has that boy done what I expected of him. He shouldn't even be here now by rights. When I sent him off on his quest, I never expected to see him again. Certainly, he was never supposed to actually track down and fight a dragon. He was supposed to do the sensible thing and just keep on going into exile as I intended. But no, he had to be different. He had to do his duty. Oh, well. He's not a bad lad in his way.
Then why isn't he here with you?
No reason why he should be. Since the day he was born, he's known nothing but loneliness and despair, all because of me. I didn't need or want a second son, and the court is very quick to pick up on things like that. They made his life a misery, and I let them do it. I could have protected him, advised him, loved him, but I never did. Because I always knew that one day I might have to order his death to secure the throne for Harold. It had to be that way. The land couldn't survive a civil war, not so soon after the border war with Hillsdown. And now, after all these years, I can't help thinking that the land would have been safer in Rupert's hands than Harold's. At least Rupert has a heart. Now, let's see if this stirrup will hold me. There we are. Seems pretty sturdy. We'll be off soon, Thomas. Wish me luck.
Good luck, John. And watch your back.
I will.
King John urged his horse forward and slowly made his way through the packed ranks of the waiting army to join his sons before the castle gates. Rupert's hands closed tightly on the unicorn's reins as he watched his father moving slowly and purposefully toward him. His back muscles tensed painfully as he struggled to appear calm and unconcerned.
Rupert?
I'm a little curious as to what he thinks he can still take from me.
Maybe he wants you to go outside first and try to talk the demons out of it.
I should be so lucky. A direct request would be easy to refuse.
The guards surrounding Rupert grew silent and watchful as the king carefully maneuvered his horse into position midway between Rupert and Harold. The two princes bowed briefly to their king.
Got here just in time, father. We were becoming concerned about you.
Thank you, Harold. Now, if you'll excuse us for a moment, I want to speak to Rupert in private.
Of course.
As Harold moved his horse several yards away, King John noted the man's face. It revealed nothing at all. Harold was becoming increasingly hard to read, even in the kingdom's darkest moments. He put that thought aside and looked meaningfully at Rupert's honor guard. The guardsmen stared calmly back. Several of them ostentatiously rested their hands on their sword hilts.
Call off your dogs, Rupert, before I decide to have them muzzled.
The guards looked at Rupert, who nodded reluctantly. The guardsmen bowed to him, stared coldly at the king, and then withdrew into the crowd, though not very far. Rupert studied the king thoughtfully.
Whatever you want, father, the answer's no.
You always were a cautious one, Rupert.
I've been given enough cause.
The king looked away, unable to meet Rupert's steady gaze. His horse fidgeted uneasily as the king's hands played aimlessly with the reins.
Rupert!
Father?
How long now before we go out?
A few minutes at most.
You hate me, son?
Sometimes, I suppose. You've given me very few reasons to love you, but you're the king, and the land must come first. I've always known that.
Politics. It all seems so petty now, set against the long night waiting outside our walls. I've always done my best for the land, done what I believed was right, even when it cost me the things I treasured most. But none of the things I fought for seem to matter much anymore, Rupert. You're my son. my blood and kin, and I want you to know that I am proud of you. Despite many things, you have always been true to the land and your duty.
Why wait till now to tell me? Why not tell me when it mattered just once in front of the court?
And make you even more of a target for the court intrigues? I kept you isolated from the throne and the barons so that Harold's supporters wouldn't see you as a threat. Was I really so wrong to want you alive rather than hanged as a pretender to the throne?
That isn't why you did it. You did it for Harold's sake, not mine.
I did my best for you. What happened to your chainmail? Why aren't you wearing it?
It got in the way. I'd do better without armor.
I see. Well, watch yourself out there, son. I want you coming back in one piece.
I'll do my best to oblige you.
They looked for something else to say and found they'd said it all. They never did have much in common, and Rupert knew that he and his father were already beginning to drift apart again.
I don't know what everyone's so worried about. How can we lose with the champion leading us?
The champion isn't necessarily a touchstone for success, Rupert. He's not been defeated in battle since he became my champion over 20 years ago, and that makes him dangerous. To us, and to himself.
Dangerous? How?
He's overconfident. By the time he realizes he's not invulnerable after all, it might be too late to do him or whoever he's fighting beside any good.
Well, I'll keep an eye on him.
It might be wise. And now I'd better have a word with your brother, while there's still time.
Father, if you'd thought it necessary, you would have ordered my death, wouldn't you?
Damn right I would have. You deserve the truth, Rupert.
Rupert shook his head slowly and looked away.
So here we go again, Breeze. Out to face the darkness one more time. Yeah, I'm scared too, Breeze. My guts are churning like you wouldn't believe.
I'm fed up with all this waiting. Anything would be better than this. Well, almost anything. The gates will be open in any minute, and once the fighting starts, we won't have time to be scared.
Stand ready, the gatehouse!
A feeling of finality fell across the army as everyone realized that the gates were finally about to open. Half a dozen men-at-arms moved into position before the doors, ready to draw back the great steel bolts at the king's command. Rupert slipped his left arm through the straps of his buckler and tightened them securely. The heavy weight of the shield on his arm was deeply reassuring. He took a firm hold of both reins with his left hand. The familiar feel of the sword hilt was a comfort to him. The guardsmen jostled their way back through the crowd and took up their positions around him again. Rupert felt a strange calm seeping through him, now that the moment had finally come. One way or another, this could well be the last time he'd have to face the darkness.
Rupert!
Rupert looked back to see Julia slowly maneuvering her horse through the crowd toward him. Her troop of fighting women formed a guard of honor around her. They looked hard and competent and ready for battle. Rupert wondered wistfully if he appeared anything like as intimidating to them. He bowed politely to the women and exchanged a grin with Julia as she steered her horse in beside him.
Looks like we're finally off.
Looks like it.
Ready for the fray?
Ready as I'll ever be. How's the warlock?
Doing his best to appear confident, but it's an uphill struggle. The astrologers rounded up 50 minor sorcerers and witches, but none of them are worth much. The warlock's got them working together to support his spells, but there's no telling how successful that'll be.
Julia, do you think my plan's going to work?
Not a chance. But we've got to do something, haven't we?
It would be nice if somebody believed in my plan.
Would you rather we lie to you?
Frankly, yes.
Stand ready, the army!
Rupert eased his buckler into a more comfortable position and gripped his sword firmly. Swords and maces and lances gleamed blood red in the flickering torchlight. The fear and the tension that had filled the courtyard was gone, replaced by a fierce determination that ran through all the army, binding them together like a single giant heartbeat. A simple determination to make the demons pay dearly for what they'd done to the forest land. King John held up his sword.
Open the gates!
The heavy steel bolts slammed back into their sockets, the huge oak doors swung open, the drawbridge lowered, and the last army of the forest land surged forward to meet its destiny. Within moments, they were out and charging across the lower drawbridge. The torchlight fell away behind them, and the army plunged forward into the endless night. The leprous moon floated overhead, blue and full and malevolent. Demons rose in the thousands from the concealing shadows of the dark wood, twisted and malformed and horribly eager. Not one monstrous shape was much like any other, but the same hunger filled their glowing eyes, and they moved in obedience to a single dark purpose. The mark of foulness was upon them all, the mark of the demon prince. Sickly blue moonlight gleamed dully on the fangs and claws of the creatures of the night as they walked and crawled and slithered up out of gaping cracks in the earth. And then the army slammed into the waiting demons, and the slaughter began. Swords rose and fell against the seething darkness, and demon blood flew on the stinking air. But the first force of the charge was quickly soaked up by the sheer numbers of the demon horde. The lancers pressed stubbornly onward, followed by some of the guards, but the vast bulk of the army soon found itself trapped only a few hundred yards from the ice-covered moat.
We're not getting anywhere! That was my horse, you bastard!
The army milled confusedly at the edge of the dark wood, already broken apart into a dozen embattled groups, fighting desperately to hold their ground against the never-ending tide of demons that came pouring out of the darkness. The air misted red with blood. In the unreal light of the blue moon, the demons seemed like monstrous ghosts or nightmares come alive and solid. And bravely though the army fought, more than half of them were pulled down and butchered in the first few minutes, their screams mercifully short. There were just too many demons. Light blazed suddenly against the night, a crackling white flame that burned unsupported in the air high above the battle. Jagged bolts of lightning stabbed down into the dark wood, scattering the demons. Dozens of the creatures staggered blindly through the battle, burning like torches. Others clutched at their throats and fell to the ground as the air suddenly vanished from their lungs. Balefire blazed silver on the night, and the high magic was everywhere.
Now, attack! Move forward!
Slowly the demons began to give ground, and the army pressed forward, swords and spears flashing in the moonlight. But the High Warlock was still only human, and had already given more than one man could give. He swayed in the air, his high magic fading from the battlefield. Soon, darkness returned to the forest, and the only light was that of the blue moon. Rupert had to duck sharply as a barbed tentacle lashed at him from an overhanging branch. He started to aim a blow at the tentacle, but the unicorn had already carried him out of reach. The battle had degenerated into an unholy mess. There was no pattern or structure to the demon's attack. They came from every side at once, and for every creature that fell, there were 100 more to take its place. The army and the demon surged back and forth in a bloody confusion of swords and axes and fangs and claws, and the ground grew thick with unmoving bodies. Rupert glared about him, searching for some kind of cover. His guardsmen were gone, separated from him when the army fell apart. With the High Warlock's magic gone, the army had lost what little advantage it had seized, and already some of the smaller groups were falling back as the demons tore into them with renewed ferocity. After cleanly dispatching an oncoming demon, Rupert looked quickly about him. Less than half of the forest army were still on their feet and fighting, and all but a few were being forced steadily back by the demons. Rupert swallowed sickly as he realized how many of his army were already dead, with the battle barely begun. They never had a chance, he thought slowly. He had promised them a chance to save the forest land, and all he did was lead them to their deaths.
There has to be something that will stop the demons. There has to be!
He laid about him with his sword, trying to open up a space around him. But no matter where he turned, there were always more demons closing in on the unicorn from every side. Slowly, foot by foot, the demons pushed the army back. The battle now nothing more than a slow, dogged retreat to Forest Castle. Blood streamed across torn wounds, dark and viscous. Some of the demons turned aside to drink it, thrusting their muzzles deep into the dripping mud. The army fell back, and the demons went after them, leaping from the shadows, falling down from out of the night, reaching up from the cracks in the earth. The night grew steadily darker, and the shadows were oozing with distorted life. Princess Julia looped her reins around her arm and swung her sword with both hands, holding back the demons by sheer ferocity. Her fighting women were scattered among the army, but Julia had already seen most of them fall to the demons. They'd fought well and died bravely, but they never had a chance against so many demons. Julia was thrown as several demons moved in for the kill.
Here!
Her horse was nearby, blood flowing freely from its neck. Several demons came from both sides and moved in for the kill.
No!
Julia kept her wits about her, but her mount's death had shaken her. Everything was happening so fast. She backed quickly away as the demons moved to surround her, cutting her off from the main bulk of the army. Julia set her back against the trunk of a decaying tree and glared desperately about her. The army was being forced further away with every movement, and there was no way she could rejoin them. The demons moved slowly forward, taking their time, enjoying her fear. Alone and on foot, all her strength and skill with a sword wasn't going to be enough to save her, and she knew it.
Oh, damn it all! Fine. If this is the end, I'm not going down without a fight.
She sheathed her sword and brought her hand back to draw Wolfsbane. The sword seemed to almost leap into her hand, clearing the long silver scabbard with ease. The wide steel blade gleamed dully before her and then pulsed with a sudden, sickly yellow light. The demons froze in their tracks, staring at the glowing sword as though mesmerized. The hilt was unpleasantly warm in Julia's hands, and there was a new feeling in the night as something stirred, something that had slept for centuries and was now awake and aware. The huge sword didn't even grate on the demon's bones. Julia grinned harshly as the demon fell, and then her grin disappeared as the two halves of the demon's body rotted and decayed and fell apart, all in a few seconds.
Wolfsbane! Bane! Death, ruin, destruction, or decay!
More demons drew themselves forward. The infernal device glowed with an unhealthy yellow light, like a corpse fire on a cairn. Julia continued, cutting viciously at anything that moved. She swung the blade in wide, eager arcs, killing all in her reach. The demons did not die cleanly, and yet Julia found nothing of mercy in her. The creatures of the night fell beneath her sword in ever-growing numbers, and a bleak, savage grin slowly fixed itself to her face. There was no humor in that smile, and only a distant coldness in her eyes. It felt good killing demons, hurting them as they'd hurt others, destroying them as they'd destroyed the forest land. Her sword rose and fell, and the demons died horribly.
Get back! Damn you all!
The world tilted as Harold's mount fell. The demon who had broken his horse's leg was pierced on Harold's sword, and the royal heir had a moment to look at the battle. It wasn't going well at all. Many of the men had been forced away from their contingents, allowing the demons to surround them and tear them to pieces. The ground itself seemed to have it in for mankind. Large portions had become unstable, swallowing horses and men whole. Trees would lean over and clothesline passing lancers, or long vines would reach down and pluck men screaming from their mounts.
It's time.
Harold sheathed his sword and drew Flare Bright. He turned to his dying horse. The sword needed blood to activate its attribute.
It needs to be done.
Now, the long steel blade dripped a vivid crimson flame. The demons fell back a little. Harold bowed briefly, regretfully, to his dead mount. The demons pressed suddenly forward. Wherever Flare Bright bit into demon flesh, the creatures immediately burst into searing crimson flames that left behind nothing but ashes. The sword drank the demon's blood, and their blood fueled the sword's flames. It seemed to Harold that he had always known this, and he couldn't understand why he was suddenly so reluctant to use the sword. He moved confidently among the demons, leaving death and destruction in his wake, but he found no joy in it. For perhaps the first time in his life, he could feel events slipping out of his control. He shook his head constantly as though to clear it, and it slowly came to him that he was no longer sure whether he was using the sword or the sword was using him. Flare Bright's flames grew more and more intense as the infernal device sated itself on demon blood, until Harold could barely stand the heat blazing from the sword. He held the blade at arm's length, and still the blood-red flames rose higher, licking at the trees. Flare Bright burned against the dark, but it was not a healthy flame or a natural light, and Harold knew, deep down, that as yet the sword was barely awakened and using only a fraction of its power. Demons burned around him like so many misshapen candles, and the sweat that ran down his face was only partly due to the heat from the sword's flames.
Ah!
King John's sword shattered on a demon's scales, and he threw the broken stub in the creature's face.
Damn it! I don't have a choice!
The blade sliced cleanly through a demon's flesh without even pausing in its arc. The king frowned, impressed, but knew there had to be more to the infernal device than a keen edge. He could feel the ancient power stirring impatiently in the long blade, waiting for him to use it. He scowled uneasily. And then, without quite knowing why, King John swung down out of the saddle and stood beside his horse. In a moment, his mount was off and running, back toward the safety of the castle. The demons dragged it down before it made 20 feet.
Rockbreaker!
King John held Rockbreaker high above his head. The great sword stabbed into the earth. Long, jagged cracks opened up for hundreds of yards in every direction. The earth itself rose and fell like a great ponderous wave. Demons disappeared into gaping holes just as the sides of the chasm slammed together again. Deep in the earth, something huge and alien stirred uneasily in its sleep, and then was ground unmercifully as the earth moved around it, crushed beneath the overwhelming weight of the forest. The king stared grimly about him, satisfied at the destruction he'd wrought. And then his slight smile vanished as he saw men and women from his own army struggling to climb out of the huge crevices before the side slammed shut again.
Now!
King John quickly pulled Rockbreaker out of the ground, and the broken earth grew still. There is power in this sword, the king realized. Power to break and reshape the earth itself. Power that could level mountains or raise up new ones. And it wasn't until later that he remembered how many of his own people had died under that power.